Welcome to Book Hype, Hype Bubble's podcast all about books. I'm Jen, and I'm here today with lots of guests. First, I have Mikhail and Kyle, who are our normal hosts, but we also have two very special guests. We have authors of Dune, Carrie Korb and Lori Langdon. Hey, everybody.
Hello.
Hi.
Good morning.
Are you not caffeinated, Mikhail? That was a little delayed.
I'm getting there.
Okay, good. Very good. So today we have Carrie and Lori joining us, and we're going to talk about their new book, Dune, later on in the show. We're going to ask them lots of fun questions. But first, we're going to talk about what everyone's been reading this week, because let's face it, it's been a long week. And I haven't been here in a couple weeks because I've been doing all kinds of crazy things. So let's get caught up on what everyone's been reading. Mikhail, what have you been reading?
On Friday, I started a book called The Cuckoo's Calling by Mrs. Robert Galbraith. It's interesting. I'm not usually a mystery reader. I think I've spoken about this before on the podcast. I really have that urge to just skip to the end and be like, okay, this is cool, but who did it? But yeah, so far I'm enjoying it. I don't know if it's not the type of book I would ever have picked up if, the author hadn't been revealed, but, something I actually like about the fact that she's written different sort of novels is that now I read those different sort of novels, whether or not I like them. It kind of exposes me to other kinds of fiction.
Awesome. Kyle, what have you been reading?
Well, I've been reading Two Boys Kissing because of reasons. and then I've also been reading The Cuckoo's Calling and Ender's Game. Yeah, so all of that.
Getting caught up on everything there, I see. Very nice.
Yep.
Lori and Carrie, do you have time to read, or is all your time spent writing these days?
We have time to read. I think that that's really essential. If you are a writer, you must read, especially in your genre. I think that you have to kind of keep your head in the game and see what inspires you. So I think that's really important.
Awesome. So Lori, what have you been
Lori's
reading?
Lori's right about that. It's essential to make time to read, even if you don't feel like you have the time.
Excellent. So have you guys been reading anything interesting lately?
This is Lori. I am actually almost finished with Under the Never Sky, and I know I'm like a year behind, so don't tell me how it ends, but I'm really enjoying it.
Yeah, I think that's the truth with authors, is we make time to read, but we're like a year behind in our books. I am kind of going through a contemporary phase right now. I know I got an arc recently of Simone Okolice's new YA, and it kind of wild cards, and it pushed me to kind of go through a contemporary reading phase. So what I'm reading now is Pushing the Limits by Katie McGarry.
I love that book.
I actually read her second book first because, you know, we've been bumping into Katie at like BEA in New York and ALA in Chicago and a couple of like regional Midwestern events. And so I had picked up Dare You To, and I finally read it. And then I was like, oh my gosh, I've got to get Pushing the Limits. So I'm reading that. And I'm also reading, because I usually read two or three things at once. I know that's kind of an exception, but that's just kind of how I roll. So I'm also reading an indie book that's kind of been overlooked that I'm really enjoying. It's called Robin in the Hood by Diane J. Reed. And it's a retelling of Robin Hood, where an upper-class girl named Robin kind of falls from grace and her dad winds up in scandal. And they go hide out in this, like, trashy trailer park in the middle of nowhere. And I'm thoroughly enjoying it.
It sounds super fun, actually. I might have to check that out.
It is. It's so well written, and it's just kind of under the radar there, but I have to admit, I am immensely enjoying it.
Excellent. Those sound super fun. I just finished Anti-Goddess by Kendare Blake, and I absolutely love Kendare Blake. She's just, her stuff is so cool, and it's creepy, and it's just so well written. And I love every minute of Anna Just in Blood, and Anti-Goddess is just as good. And it comes out this month, or no, at the beginning of September, excuse me. I always get confused. Very beginning of September, and it's absolutely worth the pickup. I loved it, so it's really great.
I have to ask, have any of you guys read the arc of, I think it's These Broken Stars?
Oh, is it from Hyperion?
Yeah.
I haven't read it yet, but I have it on my shelf.
Okay, I read it. I was just really curious to see, like, what you guys thought of it, but I won't discuss until
okay.
I read it.
I'll email
never
you
get
once
arcs,
I read it.
So.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I have it. It's because it doesn't come out until, like, December. It's in a separate pile.
Yeah.
Like, I try to go through my months and have them organized, because otherwise it gets ugly.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so that's very good. I also just got in 3 new arcs yesterday. I got in Snake Root, which is an Andrea Kramer Nightshade novel.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and I got Control, which is this really cool novel that I saw at ALA. So I'm really glad I got a copy of it. It's about making chemically altered humans and stuff. It looks super cool. And I was talking to the author who wrote it, and she actually has a doctorate degree in chemistry. So everything in it is, like, really accurate, and, like, it's super cool. So I'm really excited about that one, too. And then I got Rebel Spring, which is the Fallen Kingdom. There we go. It's the second book in the Fallen Kingdom series.
Oh, so, I wanted to read that first one.
Yeah, it's pretty good. It's very kind of... It's a little Game of Thrones-esque in a sense. It's got that vibe to it, so it's pretty good if you like that kind of read. So,
yeah.
Definitely. Hey, this is Carrie. Mm-hmm. We bump into a lot of the same debut YA authors in this area, and there's like this stronghold in the Midwest. But there are 2 books coming out if you can get your hands on ARCs that I think are going to be amazing. One is Jeffrey Gerard's Project Cain, which is about, like, a teenager who's cloned from the DNA of Jeffrey Dahmer.
Oh, wow.
Oh, yeah.
Dark.
Ooh. Nice.
Comes out
that
in
sounds
September.
Like my kind of book.
I was thinking that. And the other is Alienated, and it's by Melissa Landers. And she actually is a colleague of ours. We work together a lot and do a lot of things together. We are part of the Honestly YA blog together. But it's a foreign exchange between an alien student and your typical teenage girl. It's pretty fun.
I actually broke my own rules, and I've already read Alienated. Because
oh my gosh!
I got it at ALA, and when I was talking to the people I've heard, they're like, oh, it's so good, it's so good. So I kind of just caved, even though it doesn't come out till like January next year or whatever. I totally caved and already read it. And I did really, really like it a lot, actually, so...
And yeah, isn't the cover awesome. Gorgeous?
The cover is stunning. And that was part of the reason I picked it up, because the cover is absolutely stunning. And then I read it. I was like, this is so much fun. I loved it. Loved
Her
it.
Voice is hilarious. Like, she has a way of weaving in humor that yeah. doesn't interrupt the plot. You know, you mm-hmm. still, like, are really, it's very intense. And, you know, the plot is really intriguing, but still she has that humor in there. I don't know how she does that.
I don't know. I absolutely loved it. It was so much fun. It could definitely be like a TV show or something. Like, you get that vibe from it as you're reading it. It's really quick and well-paced as well. So, loved it. And,
yeah, definitely.
Okay, so, let's see. Okay, so we're going to talk about book bites right now. And our book bite topic this week is, thank you to Mikhail, because I couldn't come up with one this week, like, just drawing a blank, is your defining moment as a book lover. So, Mikhail, do you want to start, because this was your book bite, and you can kind of give us an example of what you mean by that?
Yeah, sure. I guess I meant, you know, I mean, books are a huge part of all of our lives, I think, and probably, if someone's listening to this podcast, a huge part of yours. And I know socially that also kind of came to define me a lot. And so I was just sort of thinking, like, I can remember 1 or 2 times, like, in school, like in even elementary school, and being on the playground and having a book and people like looking at me and being like, what are you doing? And I'd be like, well, I'm reading. And, you know, that kind of just, especially when you're younger and you're so kind of defined by what people see you do, that I was just wondering, you know, if anybody else had like moments that kind of like stood out to them. I mean, I distinctly remember like rebelling against my mother and ask, I mean, not necessarily in a good way, but bringing a book to somebody's house that I'd been invited to, you know, in case I got bored. And that's just the rudest thing ever. But it was so much a part of what I needed to do, because it was like, well, I need to have a book, because, you know, I needed to have this other world with me on hand. So yeah, I was wondering if anybody else had things like that that stuck out to them.
I do have one that was a little more recent. I mean, I actually can relate to Mikhail in the fact that I would take books everywhere when I was a kid, but that has kind of continued into my adulthood. And last summer, or the summer before, I can't remember, I was at the softball field. I have two sons, and it was practice. It wasn't a game, in my defense. And I was sitting in the bleachers reading one of the Mortal Instruments books by Cassandra Clare. And I was so like engrossed. I wasn't paying any attention to the practice. And, you know, all the moms that they're like flitting around me talking about their kids and the PTO and, you know, all of the little suburban stuff. And I just was not, I was not focused on that at all. And someone comes up to me and they're talking to me and I'm just like, I really don't want to talk right now. I didn't say that, but I think I gave off that vibe. And I'm like, okay, I can't bring books to practice anymore because that's just completely rude.
But at the same time, it's your nice, peaceful time.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, it actually gave me the opportunity to talk about my writing, because that was kind of before, you know, I had a book deal. It was before people really knew I was a writer. And it gave me an opening to really talk about that. And I don't know about you guys, if, you know, if you're all writers, but at first when I was writing my first novel, especially, I was just kind of afraid to talk about it. It was so close to my heart. And I didn't want to get that look from people that they would say, oh, you're a writer. Like, some people just don't get it.
This is true.
So it took me a while to kind of come out
off of that.
Yeah, exactly. Like, what? Yeah. Oh, are you going to be rich? Is your husband going to retire? Like, they have no clue. Mm-hmm.
I was actually once confronted by someone. Like, they got really, like, offended that I wanted to be a writer.
Oh, my God.
Like, I don't think they realized that they were offended, but it was very clear to me that, like, they seriously had problems with me not getting, like, a practical degree. And, yeah. So I was like, well, you know what? Someday I'll drop off a copy at your house and...
That's the best comeback.
Gary, do
you or, you know, you could always write a character after that person and then kill them
off. And then
off.
Kill them off. Yes.
Yeah. That's true. See, that's the writer's revenge. You have to be careful. You don't go smashing people's dreams because you never know when you may turn up in a book.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've killed off a couple people who've been mean to me, I have to say.
See, it's therapeutic. It's okay.
This is Carrie. You know, I was a typical teenager who would like sneak a book into the high school dance and sit on the bleachers and read while other kids were doing whatever it was they were doing, kind of always on the outside. But that question is so funny, because what popped into my head was this time I was in Italy and we were traveling with a repertory theater company, and I was on my way to Sorrento, and we stopped at this beautiful overlook over the Mediterranean Sea, and it was gorgeous. Big boulders looking down on glimmering water, and all I wanted was to find a perfect spot in the sun in this beautiful landscape and read. Like, reading in a gorgeous setting heightens the experience for me. And every so often I would look out at how gorgeous it was and go back to my book. And that's like nirvana for me.
I like that, though. See, I get that way, too. If it's really, it's like a beautiful place and it's like comfortable and relaxing and quiet, it's the perfect place to read a book. So you always have to have one like on hand.
Absolutely. And, you know, I was so engrossed in my book, the van we were traveling in actually got ripped off while we were stopped there.
Oops.
I never heard that story, Gary.
Yep. Oh, I was ripped off multiple times in Italy. That's just one of the more memorable ones.
So life lesson number two is, when you travel to Italy, keep everything close.
Absolutely.
Kyle, do you have a moment?
Well, okay. So I think I have two, maybe one. I don't know. And they literally just escaped my head as I tried to talk about them. What the heck? Oh my goodness! I can't remember my moments.
Do you want me to go, and then maybe you'll have your moment back?
Yes, please. Okay. I'm so sorry.
Oh, wait, I know what Kyle's was. It was this time that someone died,
and it was a really beloved character, and everyone else cried, and he laughed maniacally.
Oh yeah, because that's what I do when I'm my favorite character dies. I go, "Mwah, perfect."
Exactly. I can hear you across the country. I think for me, I was really little, and I remember being in, like, kindergarten, and I had this best friend who was a boy, and he could read. Like, we would get, like, weekly readers in school, and we would have the little articles, and we'd be able to read them, and we'd read out loud and stuff, and at the time, I couldn't read, and I remember being so angry that I couldn't read, and he could read. I, like, came home, and my grandmother watched me every day after school, and I was, like, demanding that I learn how to read. So she had taught me how to read pretty quickly once we kind of got going. But yeah, I was like livid that someone could do something that I couldn't. So that was one of the very first things that reminds me of reading, is not being able to do it and being mad that these other kids could. Not that all of them could, but he was my friend and he could do it and there's no way he was going to be better than me, kind of thing. I'm not competitive at all, I swear.
That's adorable.
But, yeah. So I was going to read too. And so I remember my grandmother teaching me how to read.
And then
yeah, I know, right? Sweet. And then I didn't stop. Like, I devoured books. And I guess, I mean, in high school, I stopped a little bit because I played sports. So I literally would go to school at 7 o'clock in the morning and not get home until 8 o'clock at night. So there wasn't a lot of time for reading. It was, you know, the only reading I did was for, like, homework, which wasn't very exciting, let's face it. But once I got into college, there was all kinds of time because you only go to class for, like, an hour a day. It's awesome. So I started to read again in college and kind of picked up my love of reading again. And then didn't stop and now have, like, books and piles everywhere because I, yeah, can't help myself. So that's kind of my moment, I think, is, you know, defining me as a reader in the very beginning and then, like, refining myself as a reader in college.
Okay, I totally remember what mine is now. It was my birthday, and I didn't get any gifts, and I was really upset about it, and, like, 11 o'clock at night, my parents are like, oh, we did get you a gift. We just forgot. I'm like, what's okay. And then they gave me Harry Potter. And that was the first book that I actually, like, remember. I know I've read before that, but that was the first book that I remember, like, being really, really, really excited about and getting to start. And so I think that's what solidified my love for reading, because, I mean, Harry Potter then continued on for several years, and I was just into it even more every year. And then also, almost anytime I walk into a bookstore for some reason, I tend to have this moment where I'm just like, Jesus, there's so many, like, worlds and characters and words in this one place, and it's crazy. And whenever I think about that, I'm like, man, I love reading. So that happens multiple times, and then there's that little thing, this little kid.
Very sad, though.
Oh, that they forgot my birthday or forgot to give me my gift? Yeah.
Yeah. How old were you?
I have no idea. I'm terrible with age. Whenever the first Harry Potter book came out, I don't want to age myself and make myself sound young. So
you are young, Kyle. I was gonna say, you basically grew up with Harry Potter. You're that generation that was the age of Harry every year he had a birthday.
I did. Yeah.
And there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, I'm envious of that.
Yeah. I'm like, I'm obsessed with Harry Potter stories. Just like people, you know, the way books came into their lives, the way they affected their lives. I'm just a total sucker for that.
It's kind of a big pop culture phenomenon, the whole Harry Potter like, it's almost like a Harry Potter generation, really, when you think about it. Because, again, all of these kids grew up for essentially 10 years reading the story of this one character. Mm-hmm. And so it's kind of cool how that one set of books affected an entire generation. So
Harry Potter really, this is Lori, made me fall in love with young adult literature. So I'm quite a bit older, but it made me want to write for young adults. So it's definitely very close to my heart.
It also, like, it doesn't stop, like, giving. Like, I have a friend who just had the most hilarious Harry Potter moment that she was, she's married, she has kids, and she was with her family and brother, or, like, she got, like, a letter at work that had, like, a million stamps on it. And so she was telling the story. She's like, you know, the letter that Mrs. Weasley sent. And one of her brothers was like, that wasn't Mrs. Weasley, that was Ron. And they had an actual argument about who it was. And then, of course, they had to go and pull out the book and consult the book. And then, you know, of course, it was Mrs. Weasley. And then her younger brother, who's, like, quite a bit younger than she is, just, like, who'd read it already, just, like, spent the rest of the day reading the book. And I was like, this stuff is just so amazing and beautiful. And, like, I don't know. I can't get enough of it.
Oh, that was our awe moment of the day, I think.
Yeah.
All right, Kyle, do you want to talk about battleships? Because there's some crazy things going on in our battleship world of books right now.
It's pretty sad. So far, we've had some pretty intense battles. I think the most intense really were Hazel and Augustus versus Sydney and Adrian, and Sydney and Adrian won. And which I think it helps, Sydney and Adrian are from Bloodlines.
They
and the
are.
Whole Vampire Academy / Bloodlines, like the film, and like they've been like publishing about battleships. So they've been like, oh, vote for like Rose and Demetrius. So you have like all these thousands of people.
Yeah, not sure anyone understands how large the Vampire Academy fandom is.
Yeah, I had no idea.
They're super vocal too. So I would not be surprised if it comes down to Rose, Dimitri, Sydney, Adrian in the end, to be honest.
That would be really interesting.
That would be ugly, man. I'm going to tell you right now. It might be a dead tie. But yeah, it would be ugly.
So, yeah, that's happening. And then we are basically in our semifinals now. So the battle that's going up today is Rose and Dimitri versus Percy and Annabeth, and I really hope Percy and Annabeth win, because I love them.
Oh, hell no.
No. No. Rose and Dimitri. You have not read the Vampire Academies, but let me tell you, Kyle, I think it's actually something you would love. There's lots of death. There's lots of, like, dark twists that I think you would totally appreciate. So, I'm highly suggesting you read that series next.
Okay.
It's fast, no,
but
too.
Percy and Annabeth, though.
Percy. I know, Percy and Annabeth are so adorable together.
Yeah.
No.
I would say one reason why, but it's a spoiler for The Mark of Athena, so I won't say it.
Oh, yeah, don't, because I haven't read.
Yeah, but if you know what I'm talking about, then you know what I'm talking about, and you know what I'm talking about.
That was not cryptic at all. Then you know, okay? You're in the know.
Oh, man. So, I mean, that's basically it. Battleships is almost over. Started, like, 2.5, almost 3 months ago, and so...
Wait, you forgot the biggest one.
What?
Ron and Hermione.
Oh, how did I thought, I just did, I...
He just wants to forget it. It's such
yeah,
a...
Yeah, I think that's
so horrible.
Ron and Hermione lost to Lyra and Will from His Dark Materials, so that was interesting, because everyone expected Ron and Hermione to win, and then Lyra and Will gained over, like, 1,000 votes in, like, a couple of hours, which is crazy. Joss said that it's impossible to cheat, apparently, so hopefully Lyra and Will are actually being, I can't talk, guys, this is not fair.
Have you heard
being represented by fans and not bots, that's what I hope.
Oh.
But yeah. I don't, like, that fan, I didn't realize that fandom had, like, such a presence, because... I mean, I know, like, they're really good books, and I've read them, and, you know, I have mixed feelings on them, but they're very good books. But I didn't realize that they had such a, like, popular fan thing. I feel like, I don't know, my personal thing was like, oh, Ron and Hermione are going to run away with this, like, I don't have to, like, vote. And then I clicked on it, and I was like, wait a second, what? And it was like, wait, I only have one vote? Like, what's happening?
Yeah.
And... and then, like, they went in, it was worse, because they went into the sudden death round, and it was, oh my god, it was, like, so, this is, actually, you know what, I think Kyle actually orchestrated this to break all our hearts, to have the sudden death of Ron and Hermione.
Mm-hmm. I did.
Yeah, I hate you.
Getting to see people all, like, emotional, it's the best.
You're ridiculous. Anyway, so we're just going to quickly get into some listener feedback. So from Twitter, Michaela Palantine says, "Epicave, hey guys, I just wanted to say love the show and you guys are awesome. Thanks for an awesome podcast." And you're welcome, Michaela, anytime.
Thank you.
And Laura Morrow says, "Please do older book podcasts." I'm assuming she means like classics or books that were written a while ago, perhaps. Laura, feel free to send us some suggestions. We're always open to suggestions of things that you would like us to talk about. So if there's something specific, please make sure you let us know and we'll try to get on that when we're doing our book selections.
We have a question from Danielle Jeannie. I hope that's right. Why is this multiple perspective thing a big YA trend right now? Twilight, Allegiant, City of Bones is multiple POV too. Not a fan. That's really interesting. I think we have some writers on who can maybe talk to us about that. Go ahead, Kyle.
What? Sorry, <that's good>. Okay.
Carrie or Lori, do you guys, because you guys also write in multiple perspective, so this is kind of a good question for you guys. Is there a reason why you guys chose to write multiple perspective?
Carrie?
Lori? I think for me and for Lori, each story is different. And depending on how you envision a story and what kind of story you're trying to tell kind of dictates how many POVs you have in a story and whether they're first person or third person. Specifically for Dune, Lori and I knew we wanted to tell a story of two best friends and that the overall broader story that we wanted to tell over four books, that both of these characters would have an equal part to play. So we didn't want to start off with just one POV and have readers just fall in love with this character and then switch to another POV and have readers in the second book going, "Where's the other character? I hate this character." We wanted them both to have an equal stake in this series. And so we actually started off with a 50-50 split, alternating chapters. And then we did a little restructuring, as often happens when you're actually headed to publication, so that the story centers on one character more than the other. But you get both perspectives so that readers get to know and have a relationship with both characters.
And that makes sense. I think it's funny that they mentioned Twilight, because Twilight, it took me a second to realize that it actually did have another perspective in it, because the first three books are all Bella. It's really one perspective. So that one kind of threw me off. And Allegiance,
you know why that is, don't you?
Why what is? Why Twilight had a second
book? Why she brought Jacob's perspective in?
Well, for a couple reasons, but yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. Well, for a couple of reasons, but think about where Bella is in that place. She would be so boring to read.
Exactly.
And she's confined, and, you know, in order to progress the story, she had to go outside of Bella's head to continue the story. And, you know, there were some other reasons as well, but if you got that part of the story from Bella's perspective, you couldn't finish the story.
No, you would have been in a coma for a while. It would have been super boring.
Yeah.
Oh, look, I'm napping again. It's dark. Awesome.
See, you know, I kind of object to that reasoning, though, because I feel like it's your job as an author to make the story interesting enough. It's not like, and I'm not saying that, you know, Stephanie Meyer made this decision lightly or anything, but I do think that, like, there is a tendency to be like, okay, well, we'll just do this from somebody else's perspective. I'll just change the way the books are written. And it's like, no, it's, you have to, like, it's your job to find what inspires it. Like maybe not have Bella be in a coma for 5 months.
It was five months.
Something like
she was
that.
Bedridden, dude.
But I think you're right. Sometimes as writers, especially of our series, we write ourselves into a corner that we don't see when we start. So Lori and I, it was really important that we set the tone right away for readers that there are two characters involved and you're going to get both perspectives.
Which I think is
I mean, that's
good.
Something I'm interested in, like with Allegiant, you know, to see, to like, I hope it isn't, you know, it isn't gratuitous, but I don't know. I'm wary of it. I'm not necessarily, you know, down on it.
Do you want to know what I think happens in Allegiant?
But Chris dies.
I think someone dies, or I think something happens and she's no longer going to be the main point of the story, and that's why you have all the novellas from Forrest's point of view, because it's getting you ready for what's going to happen in Allegiant and what you need to be able to understand and hear Forrest's voice clearly, because I think he'll end up being the main narrator.
That's so weird though, considering, I mean, mild spoiler alert, it's so weird considering the fact that Allegiant had to do with, like, her family being brought up in that video at the very, very end. And I'm like, you would think it would be more about how Triss deals with that and, like...
Yeah.
I mean, the only other thing is if they're separated, and because everyone is so attached to Four, in order to still maintain his story, you have to be with him.
Yeah.
So, I mean... there's that too, but let's face it, Kyle, you like the death option much better. You know you do.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Clearly.
But what? Way to disempower a main female character. No.
I'm just saying. I just have to get used to this sort of thing. I know, like, you. I know, but it happens.
Aren't the four novellas coming out after Allegiant comes out, though?
Are they? I thought they were right before.
I think they're coming out beforehand.
Are they before? I mean, it would make sense before, but for some reason, I thought I had read that they were coming out after. I hope I'm wrong, because if we're going to get acclimated for Four so that we accept two POVs, then I need to get more Four before we go into Allegiant.
Yes, I agree. That's why I thought they were before. Let me see.
Yes, what it is. Oh, it's weird. So the transfer is happening on September 24th. Allegiant is coming out on October 22nd. And then three stories after that, The Initiate, The Sun, and The Traitor are coming out.
That's what I thought.
Yeah.
Well, that's just afterwards. Weird.
Yeah.
So I wonder if... See, that leads me to believe that something happens at the end and Four's story isn't finished.
Well, I guess we know Four doesn't die.
Or maybe he does, and this is the flashback to the things that happened to him when he's away from Triss.
That's what they are, is they're his story, I believe, about him transferring out of abnegation. And so it's talking about the transfer and his initiation and his relationship with his father, and then the traitor being, I think, him leaving his father, I think. Maybe. I don't know.
Maybe the other stories have spoilers in them, and you have to read Allegiant before you can get parts of his backstory.
Yeah, that makes sense.
That would make a lot of sense.
Yeah, interesting. All you have to do is just picture Theo James reading this to you, and you should be all set. It should be fine. His voice should be perfect. I'm just going to
I may be different than you guys, but I'm actually a fan of getting different POVs sometimes. I loved hearing Jacob's voice when I was reading Twilight, and I'm actually really looking forward to getting into Four's head a little more, and to me that is, I look forward to that. So I think you guys are on a little different perspective. It sounds like you like having that same POV from the beginning to end of the story. Is that right?
No, actually, I love getting different POVs. I'm on board with you. Because it sometimes helps to understand a character more. Sometimes you're just like, I just don't get why you would make that choice. But then when you see them for who they are inside their own head rather than through the lens of a different character, it's so completely different. And I love that aspect of storytelling, because you get something so different when you get that, you know, through the eyes of that character rather than through the lens of a different character. So I love it. I'm with you.
I agree.
You know who does the multiple POVs amazingly, in my opinion, this is Carrie, by the way, is Melissa Marr. I love her fairy series and how you get to know a variety of different characters, and you're constantly getting different perspectives.
Yeah, her stories are really cool. She's a really interesting storyteller in that way, and how she meshes everything together, and how her stories take on this really cool kind of path, and they're all a little bit linked, but you don't have to read them all together. So I like the way she writes as well.
So on the podcast post, I'm not sure which one this is, but Tyrannel says, it seems to me that with the rise of big book-to-movie franchises like Harry Potter, Twilight, Hunger Games, etc., and also with the increase in popular YA fiction over the last 10 years or so, the movie studios are now going back to books that were published in the late 90s, early 2000s in search of the next big thing. This seems to be the case with adaptations like Ender's Game, The Giver, The Lost Years of Merlin, and Artemis Fowl. Those are more the series that I grew up on, and I'm excited for them to get their chance and to be adapted for movies. What do you all think of this trend?
I'll be honest, those movies, those books were always optioned as film. They just couldn't be made at the time. There was no, like, basis to make them. There were no examples of Harry Potter, Twilight, any of those that were successful. So the movie studios optioned them, but they weren't prepared to make them. But because of the upswing in adapting novels and there being, you know, a lot of success with that, that's why they've moved into production. So they've always been optioned. It's not like they're going back and re-optioning them. They've always been optioned. They've just sat on a shelf somewhere because nobody knew what to do with them.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's sort of the same point that, like, that, you know, now YA is a pretty big thing. I mean, you know, I think a lot of this rides maybe on, you know, the next two big ones, which are, I guess, The Mortal Instruments and Divergent. But, you know, because I kind of think if those both flop, that might kind of shuffle things downward. But, yeah, I mean, I think it comes to the same point, you know, that suddenly, like, there is this model to look at. And, you know, there is a prospective profit area to exploit. And, yeah, I mean, it's I don't think it's a bad thing. I think that, you know, there's a lot of books that people grew up with that they have, you know, that have potential. I haven't actually read a lot of these, although I am excited and kind of scared for the Giver adaptation because heart.
Yeah, I think that one will be interesting. Although Jeff Bridges has been attached to the project for a really long time. And I saw Lois Lowry speak a couple years ago in Boston, and she was all like, Jeff Bridges says he's going to make my movie. I don't think he's going to make my movie, but we've been talking about it, and he has some really good ideas. And so she was involved. So I think that always helps when you have the author kind of involved in talking about what it should look like to an extent, because that always helps keep the perspective of what the fans are used to. So I think that's always really beneficial when a film includes the author's perspective, because then you're keeping the perspective of the reader as well, I think. So I think...
And I think...
Mm-hmm, go ahead.
I just think that's one of the greatest trends in book to movie adaptations recently is the integrity in trying to honor the book fandom and have a screenplay that actually is something that's going to deliver and delight your fans of the series, as well as having the author's engagement in the development of the movie. I mean, 10 years ago, you didn't have that. And for as long as I can remember in Hollywood, you know, there've been some book to movie adaptations, and now they have a little bit more integrity as their books onto the big screen. I mean, they still have to make some hard decisions because not everyone gets to a 2-hour movie, but it's definitely a lot closer than adaptations were 10 years ago.
Yeah, you got Ella Enchanted 10 years ago.
Hey, I really liked Ella Enchanted.
Did you read the book, Kyle?
That was more than 10 years.
Okay, if you didn't read the book, yeah, sorry.
Oh, but it was so fun. Okay, I'll stop. I'll read the book and then I'll watch the movie.
You consider reality, okay? I don't think the movie did that. Anyway.
Okay, we all know how you feel about Ella Enchanted, Mikhail. We've had this conversation before, and it's ugly. We're not going to do it again.
I think it cannot be had enough, personally.
I know. Okay, so let's get into our discussion and chat with Carrie and Lori about Dune, their debut novel, which comes out in... When does it come out, ladies? I forget. I had it written down.
Tuesday!
Comes out Tuesday! How perfect is that? Very convenient timing, isn't it?
Very.
Awesome. So, Dune is really kind of based on Brigadoon, which is a poem and, like, a Broadway play, correct? Yes? That's what
Brigadoon... Yes, right. Well, we based it very loosely on the musical, not the poem. Those two are unrelated. But the musical, we just basically took the premise and twisted it on its ear. So if you haven't seen the musical Brigadoon, you don't have to enjoy this book or to understand it. So.
Excellent. And why choose Brigadoon as your kind of basis for a twisted story?
This is Lori, and I actually saw the musical when I was enchanted by the premise. I fell in love with this mystical kingdom pierced to the outside world once every 100 years. It was a love story. It was just really but something that bothered me from the very first time I saw it was the fact that when the kingdom is not visible to the outside world, the people sleep. So in the original musical, they sleep for 100 years. And I never got that. You know, I wanted to peek behind the curtain. I wanted to see, like, what made Brigadoon thrive. And so that is what kind of prompted Carrie and I to go into that mode of what could we make this mystical kingdom into if we set our minds to it.
Excellent. Very cool. So why co-authors? How did you guys decide to write together? Because that's always a tricky thing, I think, as creative people, to find someone that you're compatible with and co-author a book with.
Well,
Carrie,
I think...
Go ahead.
I think when Lori and I decided to co-author this, we were both kind of between projects, and Lori had started talking about this idea of wanting to adapt the concept of Brigadoon to a young adult story. And so we started just batting around ideas, and then the actual concept of Brigadoon, as we got into the history of it, is, you know, there's an older German legend about a bridge that leads to a village that appears every 100 years. So there are a couple different influences for the story. The Brigadoon is an actual bridge that exists in Alloway, Scotland, that is called the Brig O'Doon, the Bridge of Doon. And so we're like, well, what if there was a whole kingdom on the other side that was called Doon, and that's what vanished into the mist? And the more we talked about it, the more we realized we wanted to do a story of best friends, and we wanted it to be two very strong female characters who are... strong yet flawed, and that have this unbreakable bond. And as we got to that point, we knew that we wanted to co-author a story together. We had no idea at the time how intense it was going to be. And <That's right. laughs> so we wrote our first draft, and it was alternating chapters back and forth telling this bigger story. And then we went through like 6 complete rewrites on it, and over 2 years, and that final draft is what readers can hold in their hands on Tuesday. So I think if we had known at the beginning how intensive it was going to be to co-author and to compromise, and you know, it's not just your creative vision, but you have to align on a creative vision. It challenged everything, the way we write, our communication skills. You know, if we hadn't been such good friends, I don't know that Doon would have ever gone to print.
And this story continues for 3 more books. We have a book coming out every year for the next 4 years. So we have to keep this going. This partnership has to remain strong. And we do kind of refer to each other as having a marriage. Like, we need marriage counseling at times.
And that makes sense, because it's hard to kind of compromise on things that you vision in a creative way, and someone doesn't have that same vision. So I could see how that would be a challenge, definitely.
Absolutely. But it's also, you know, as writers, we all have our own limitations, our own strengths. So by combining forces, we also have a broader skill set to kind of bring to characters. And I think that's really been an asset, too, as well as developing 2 very different, very unique main characters and 2 very different and unique love interests.
Right. And now each of you because there's Veronica and Mackenzie are the two best friends that you guys wrote, and you each tackled writing a different set of characters, yeah? So how did that work out? Like, how did you choose which set of characters you get each of you would write?
We really, it just was an organic process. When we started sending chapters back and forth to each other, these characters really almost wrote themselves. You know, as we were writing the story together, they developed in each of our minds, but then it was just like to have that relationship between the four of them together, the two brothers that are from Brigadoon and then the two best friends. That was something that was more individualized. So, you know, say Veronica and Jamie are the characters that I write. They're kind of my brainchild. And then McKenna and Duncan came more from Carrie, but yet we really were able to collaborate on how they interact together. So it was an interesting process.
And something we realized in the process is Lori totally loves to write bad boys, and I'm all about good guys. So that was really interesting too, that we have two totally different types of princes in our story. And that, you know, they're both lovable in their own way. Like, as much as I love Mr. Darcy, I never write that kind of character because I love the overlooked boy next door.
You know, Jamie is very much a Mr. Darcy kind of character. You're not going to really fall in love with him right out of the gate, you know, at the beginning of the book, but he grows on you. And I feel like that kind of character is so much more intriguing. That's me personally.
I do like
and
that.
And he's very
tortured. No, you're just making...
Go ahead, Kyle.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, you guys making Mr. Darcy references makes me really need to read that book, Pride and Prejudice, but that was just an offset. I liked the bad guy. I look forward to reading this and connecting with the bad boy.
Well, and bad boys are so delicious because they're tortured and they have all these demons, these internal demons they need to slay. And, you know, and I love that about the character that Lori has written, but I could never dream him up. That's not the kind of characters I write. So in that way, it's fun because there's a little something for everyone.
That's awesome. I love it. I love that you have a boy next door and a bad boy. So when you're reading, ladies, you have something for everybody. It's perfect. So what has your journey been like publishing? Like, you're published together as co-authors, and you talked about writing separately as well. So how has that all kind of worked out for you guys as writers in general?
Carrie, go ahead. Talk about your other books.
Okay. Before Lori and I co-authored, I had a couple other books that, one especially, a YA that was like the best book that every publisher in the world passed on. It was one of those, we love this, but we're going to pass. This is better than a similar book on the New York Times list, but because it's kind of similar, we're going to pass. So it's actually a story called The Halo Chronicles of Guardian, and it was a Golden Heart nominee for Best Unpublished Young Adult Fiction back in 2010. And in 2011, I decided to release it under my own label because I'd gotten so much validation that this was a great book, but Angels had trended and they weren't selling in YA. And, you know, a lot of publishing is about trends. So I have two indie releases and then a free little fun short story I wasn't doing much with. So that's out and people can read as well. And I've been really happy going both routes, traditional and going the kind of self-published indie route.
And I have other novels that I am working on getting published. One is a retelling of Oliver Twist. So I'm right now looking at going the traditional route with my individual novels, but we'll see what happens.
So I noticed, especially for you, Lori, everything you're talking about is a retelling. Is that something that you just love doing, or is it a creative choice? Like, why the retellings, I guess?
these two particular stories are probably the only retellings that I will do, just because they have very deep meaning for me from a very early age. I've fallen in love with both of those stories. But I do have another novel that is set during the Revolutionary War. It's time travel. It may never see the light of day, but it's not a retelling.
Time travel's hot right now. You never know.
You never know.
So that's very interesting. Lots of people, I think, are finding that once they've written something, if it's, you know, being passed on, even though everyone's saying it's wonderful, but we're going to pass kind of thing, that the self-publishing or the indie publishing is the way to go. And people are having tons of success with that. So I think it's fabulous that you did that, knowing that what you had written was, you know, solid and really good. And so congratulations on that, because not everyone is brave enough, I think, to publish on their own. So, Carrie, very nice job. And I'm going to have to go look that book up, because I love angel stories. I don't think they can ever be overdone.
Oh, and I won't give anything away, but there's a little something special in there for Kyle, too.
Oh, Kyle.
Yeah. You know when he reads it.
I'm so excited.
You know, I was actually at a point in my career with a agent, and everything was going along great up until a point, and then I just hit a wall in publishing where it wasn't what the market was interested in. And so it really was a great choice for my career to go ahead and release some stuff on my own. And, you know, it's been growing in momentum. I've gotten great reviews. It's, you know, it's been a positive process all the way around. And the one thing I'm really, really proud of is that, you know, I really tried to emulate a big New York release on a small scale with quality cover, quality editing, and really release a product that was going to build my brand as an author, both as a traditionally published author and an indie author.
Yeah, and I think that's really important when you do choose that route, is to make sure that everything that's going into the package is quality. So that's awesome. I'm really excited about that for you. All right. So you guys, I was checking out your website, which is super fun. You guys have all kinds of really great stuff on your website. So anyone who's interested in learning more about the world you created and everything, it's all right there, which is wonderful. So,
oh, and Jen, I've got to say, that is our placeholder website.
It is.
Our real beautiful website is still in development. Yeah. Web designer is the same person who did the Beautiful Creatures website.
Oh, yeah.
And it is gorgeous. It's just not up and running yet.
But it will have all the same fun bonus content, so.
Good, because I think the content you guys put up is so much fun. I love it. And you guys have, like, this entire, like, playlist and everything that goes along with, like, scenes and characters in the book. So do you guys write to music? How does the music fit into your process or your writing? Or does it?
Oh,
Lauren,
it really
you
does.
Start?
Yeah, we are really both very much inspired by music. I mean, we are rewriting a musical, so I guess that makes sense. But I actually write listening to my playlist, and I will hear a song sometimes on the radio or even during a TV show, and I can hear my character either singing it or I can see the scene playing out in my head as I'm listening to that song. So those songs are not arbitrary at all. They're songs that really put us into those particular scenes. And sometimes when I'm blocked and I'm writing, you know, say we're working on the sequel now, I'll go back and listen to some of those songs and it puts me directly into the character's head.
And this is Carrie. My character is in some ways very, very similar to me and in some ways very, very different. I write McKenna, and she's a little bit shallower than I am, but what we have in common is we're huge Broadway geeks. I'm such a big Broadway dork. I listen to, you know, SiriusXM Broadway radio in the car, and my daughter is obsessed with Broadway musicals. And she's fairly young, and she's already, like, picking up my obsession. I listen to Seth Speaks Broadway, and I listen to all these different influences. I'm constantly looking songs up from different shows and listening to different things. And so as I'm listening to this stuff, every once in a while a song will just hit me, and I know it's a song that would speak to my character. And that's how it kind of goes on the playlist, are songs that particularly speak to McKenna. And we actually disagree about our favorite musicals. My character, I love Spring Awakening's probably my favorite. Again, death, people die, yes. And I like the dark angsty.
Wait, people, I didn't know people die in Spring Awakening. Oh, oh my goodness.
Sorry, spoiler alert.
Everyone dies.
Sorry.
Spoiler alert, sorry.
It's okay. I haven't seen it. I love the music, though. I have the soundtrack. Anyway, oh my God. Sorry.
It's amazing. I've seen it multiple times, and it's my favorite show. McKenna's is Wicked, which I have never seen. So it's funny that my character's favorite show is a show I've not seen. Although I am going this year to see it. But I know all the music by heart. But it's just funny because she likes a little bit brighter, happy stuff. But there's some gorgeous stuff on the playlist, especially Once Upon a Time by Sutton Foster is just one of my all-time favorite songs. It's an absolute gem. And it works so well. As does Ship in a Bottle from Heartbeats, another just really gorgeous song that spoke to me, spoke to my character. And I'm so happy to have a playlist that, you know, that Lori and I have developed that we can share with readers that kind of anchors them in different scenes in the book.
That's really interesting to me because I know a lot of authors do playlists, but I don't think a lot do show tunes playlists. it's awesome, and I hope it introduces people to some new work. I'm also a Broadway baby. I just wanted to ask you guys, like, what's kind of the scariest part of this whole process? I love asking authors that because I like making them face their fears.
That's a difficult question. There's a lot that's scary about the process that I didn't anticipate. Maybe for me, and I'm just being completely honest, the scariest thing for me is the book coming out and no one reading it, you know? Mm-hmm. I want it to do well, of course. You know, I want it to reach the readers and I want it to sell. And there's really not much you can do about that once the book comes out, so.
And for me, this is Carrie. The scariest part, I think, is giving up control to a publisher. One of the most satisfying things about being an indie author is having complete control of the cover design, layout, that kind of thing. If people hate it, if there's a mistake, it's completely on me. It's my fault. But when you go with a big publisher, you don't get a say often in your title, in what your book cover looks like. All that is decided for you. Sometimes you get some input. And we're very lucky. Our publisher, Blink, does take into consideration what we think about things. But, for example, the first cover for Dune, we were still negotiating contracts. We hadn't even met our editor, and the cover was our conversation we had about the cover was when we were actually seeing it. And that is a little scary because I kind of like to have a hand in things.
Yeah, I can't. I mean, I remember like being so shocked at learning that publishers can and do change titles because. Like, I know it's just a part of the process now, but the first time I learned that, I was like, what? Are you kidding? Because, like, so much of what you identify, you know, and the way you think of a book is in the title. I mean, like, cover art is obviously super important, but as a word person, you know, I can't imagine, like, being an author and you know, typing out your title and queries and, in, you know, pitches and everything, and then, like, oh, it's something different, and you have
you
to get used to that.
You get attached to your title, and we were actually terrified that we wouldn't get to keep the title Dune because of the sci-fi classic Dune, D-U-N-E. Mm-hmm. And it's Frank funny Herbert. Because, yeah, by Frank Herbert. So we just had was it yesterday or the day before on Entertainment Weekly's website, we had an interview and a Dune excerpt posted on their site. And the first comment that came up was some guy saying, are you guys worried that your title's going to get confused with Frank Herbert's novel?
But I think the reality is teens don't know Frank Herbert's novel. They don't know D-U-N-E. And really, when you see it, it's only if you're hearing it and you're familiar with that sci-fi classic that you might have some confusion. But I think that's a small percentage. But we were afraid because just hearing the names Dune and Frank Herbert's Dune, you know, sound identical, that the publisher would want us to change the name. But they didn't.
Yay!
Yay!
So you guys are the new Dune.
That's right.
Dune like Brig O'Dune.
So,
or maybe you need that fade out. Dune, Dune.
Say it with a Scottish accent. It's Dune.
Dune. We're not good at that.
You know, I need to hire, for as much theater as I've done, I suck at accents. This is Carrie. And I need to hire, like, a vocal coach, because already we've been asked to read parts that are supposed to be in Scottish dialect. And I'm like, I just need to hire a local acting coach to help me nail it down. I do not have a Scottish accent.
Me either.
So, okay, this is the first time I've ever even, okay, admittedly heard of, like, Brigadoon or the poem or, like, the musical or anything, was when Jen told me that you guys were going to be on. I was like, oh, let me, like, catch up. Let me find out what this stuff is about. And so this may be completely an idiotic question at all, but, like, were you inspired by, like, I don't even know if there are other books about Brigadoon or about this town in Scotland, but, like,
you know, there aren't.
There aren't. Really? No, because it sounds amazing.
Brigadoon as a musical is copyrighted by the Alan J. Lerner and Frederick Lowe estate. So Lerner and Lowe wrote this musical in the 40s. It's under copyright.
Along with a lot of other musicals like My Fair Lady. They're very well known.
And so nobody could actually write an outright story that had any kind of connection to the musical for fear of copyright infringement. So we asked the Lerner and Lowe estates if we could do this retelling. It's much more of a conceptual retelling. You know, there are no characters from the musical. That was part of the agreement we made. There are no characters from the musical. The similarities are more two Americans end up in a Scottish, in the musical, it's a village. For us, it's a more of a Camelot-esque type kingdom, because for us, that was just really interesting to think about a hidden castle and princes in kilts and, you know, kind of giving it a real fairy tale kind of flair. But all the characters are completely original. Because again, it was in the permissions agreements with the Lerner and Lowe estate that we could use that concept, we could use the bridge, we could set it in Scotland. But as far as any direct correlations beyond that, you know, we were prohibited, which is fine because we wanted to tell a very original story kind of based on the concept, almost like, you know, Brigadoon the musical exists, but this is like an older legend or a hidden inspiration for the musical. And the musical is actually based, or one of the alleged inspirations for Lerner and Lowe's musical is a much older German tale about a German village that appears across a bridge once every 100 years.
Okay, see, that makes a lot more sense, because I was gonna be like, oh, are you inspired by any other books? But like, it's so cool that you guys get to be like the first like book about like Brigadoon, kind of.
Yeah, you wouldn't believe how many times we've gone to writers' conferences over the years, and we would talk about the fact that we're doing a reimagining of Brigadoon, and the writers' faces would light up. Oh my gosh, why didn't I think of that? Or we'd hear, I've been wanting to do that for years. And wow. It's amazing that we kind of got there first, you know?
So we feel really, really fortunate to have permissions from the Lerner and Lowe estates to use the concept in our story. Otherwise, we would have had to reset it in Sweden or Norway or France or somewhere else.
And you imagine if it was in Germany? Like, the guy's not wearing kilts, they're wearing lederhosen. Like, not...
No. It's yeah, just no, not the same.
You know, so our hope is, well, let me say first, you don't have to know the musical to enjoy this story. It really is a complete YA about two teenage girls who stumble on, you know, mysterious diary and cross a bridge into this Scottish kingdom that appears once every 100 years. And you don't need to know anything about Brigadoon to enjoy the story. But our hope is, you know, that this Brigadoon will, or that Dune will inspire teens to see the musical Brigadoon if they haven't seen it. You know, that a whole new generation will fall in love with the musical. They'll all wear plaid. They'll wear little Tams with yellow Tories on the top. And, you know, we'll have a whole, like, Twilight, Harry Potter dress-up thing going on, only with Scottish flair. And awesome. Singing show tunes.
Show tunes are a must, I think. It's got to happen.
They are.
I have a question. Which is harder for you guys to write, the first line or the last line?
Oh, the first, definitely. I think that I go into a story knowing how it's going to end. I have to. Otherwise, I don't have anything to write towards. So even if I don't have that last line written ahead of time, I pretty much know what it's going to say. But that first line is agonizing. I think we rewrote the first line of Dune 25 times.
We rewrote the first chapter a ton of times.
25 times, yeah.
And in each revision, we kind of had to reconfigure the story a little bit. So there were a lot of chapters that switched. They were, you know, draft 4, this chapter is in Kenna's POV, and draft 5, it's in V's POV, and they go back and forth. But I'm the opposite of Lori. I think that last line for me is harder than the first line. But the first line I know is going to take more work, because that's where everybody that hasn't judged the book by the cover is going to open it up and read that first line and make their judgments.
That is true. Very true. And this is a question we ask every author that we interview, because YA is so, like, hot right now and everyone's reading it. Which one adult, young adult book do you wish you had when you were a teen?
Oh, that's hard.
Yeah.
That's a good question.
Oh, you know, go ahead, Carrie.
I'm going to go with the probably riskier answer. It's going to be an unpopular answer. I'll just preface it. You know, for me, what got me interested in writing young adult was the Twilight series. It's by no means perfect. And I strive to write very strong heroines. You know, and you can debate Bella a lot and her strength and different character aspects. But that book, when I started reading it, and I held out for a long time where other moms were reading Twilight, and I was like, I'm not reading YA. I couldn't put it down. And once I finished the first book, I knew what kind of writer I wanted to be. The kind that wrote stories that people couldn't put down, that they read until the middle of the night, and where they would tweet me or post on Facebook, I didn't get any sleep last night because of your book. That's what I wanted. And Twilight was kind of the start of that for me.
I don't know if I can follow up. That's such a good answer. you know, mine is more safe. It's Harry Potter. I mean, that series was a kind of life-changing for me. And I wish that I had had it when I was younger, because I think it would have helped me, give me a little bit of bravery, a little bit of courage to be who I was. I was a very shy, introverted kid. And Harry, I'm very similar, I think, internal personality to Harry. Have you guys ever done that? Like personalities, like they say, you're either like Ron, Hermione, Harry. Do you guys do that?
Yeah, I think we've all done that at some point in time.
Yeah. Oh,
totally.
And anyone who says they hasn't is lying, let's face it.
Yeah, right. So I think I'm very much like Harry internally. And I think that would have really given me strength as a kid to be able to have that character and be able to read those books. So I wish I would have had those.
And when we were, you know, teenagers, there wasn't a great selection of YA. Sweet Valley Highs and
The Outsiders, you know, that was my favorite. I read The Outsiders probably 5 times.
The Outsiders. And I, you know, I read a lot of books like Thornbirds and Jaws and a lot of Stephen King and, you know, adult books, which were fine. But I love the fact that there's so much, such a diverse wealth of YA now for teen readers.
Yeah, and for adult readers, because so many adults read YA. I mean, it's because it's just a good story. It doesn't matter what the target age range is, as long as it's a good story.
Absolutely. And really, I think it sucks to be an adult. It sucks to grow up and have bills and have to go to a job every day. And I mean, it really does. Your life is not your own. And sometimes it is wonderful to read a great story with a character who gets to focus on themselves. As adults, we don't get to do that enough. We put ourselves last. And so, you know, I love a good YA where I can just get lost in a character that's not thinking about paying bills and grocery shopping and the next report that's due at work and who's going to drive the kids to golf practice.
I agree completely.
And that first love, too. I mean, that is irresistible.
That's true. I think that's what drives so many of the stories, is that idea of first love or finding yourself and all of those things that as adults we maybe sometimes wish we could do again or, you know, look back on and change or relive again in some cases, because sometimes it's just the excitement of it all that makes it that much more appealing than paying the bills.
And when you're a teenager, your feelings are so intensified. Everything, you know, is such a big deal. And I think we try to capture that in Dune, you know, with the love stories, that it's just so intense. And you feel like, okay, you're head over heels in love. You're going to be with this person forever. You know, love at first sight. There's all those different things that happen as a teenager that when you're an adult, that just doesn't really happen anymore.
You've just crushed every teenager's dream, I'm just saying.
You know, but the other great thing about YA is that it's happily ever after for now, but it's not even romance. YA romance is about, you know, your first boyfriend or your first girlfriend and something equally or more important, like, and figuring out who you are or overcoming your issue or saving the world. So I love that it's paired like that. That it's, you know, as much about yourself as it is a soulmate. If there is such a thing at, you know, 16, 17,
18. Very true, very true. All right, what we're going to do really quick to kind of wrap everything up, Kyle is going to do a lightning round set of questions with you guys, and this is how it works. Basically, it's kind of like an either-or set of questions, so he'll say sunsets or sunrises, and you guys can just yell out which one you prefer. And we'll see if you guys are actually close on anything. It'll be interesting to see as co-authors how many things you actually agree on or how different you are.
Opposite ends of the spectrum on everything. So this should be hilarious.
Excellent. So, Kyle, whenever you're ready, you can begin the lightning round.
Okay. So, sunsets or sunrises?
Sunrise.
Sunset.
Oh. Okay. Romantic comedy or action-packed movie?
Action.
Action.
Oh, we were alike. Awesome.
Tea house or coffee shop?
Coffee shop.
Tea house. I love my coffee.
Happy but ending or tragic?
Tragic. Happy.
If you could write anywhere in the world, where would it be?
Ah, there it is.
At the beach.
A cafe in Europe.
Instant love or slow-burning romance?
Slow-burning romance.
Instant love.
Chocolate or peanut butter?
Chocolate.
See, you agreed on two. Woo! Okay. And that is the end of our lightning round.
And that was a very short lightning round.
Yeah, it was. It's just for a little bit of fun. It's
so funny because Lori and I will get together and we'll be like, you know, so we have a small group of author friends And they'll be like, we need your opinion. Which music do you, or which cover, or which this? Lori and I are always at opposite ends.
Yeah, it's hilarious. I'm like, why do you ask both of us?
Okay, so that pretty much wraps up this episode of Book Hype. Thank you guys so much for joining us on this episode.
Thank you so much for having us.
This was so much fun. Jinx! I jinxed with light.
So, Dune comes out this Tuesday, which is August 21st?
20th.
Sorry. I knew I was going to get the date.
Buy Dune on the 20th and then read it while you're waiting in line to go see The Mortal Instruments on the 21st.
There you go. And I've seen The Mortal Instruments, and it is fantastic. I loved it. So
I'm playing hooky the 21st. We have a big launch party at Joseph F. in Cincinnati on the 20th. So we're doing this big launch party, and then I'm playing hooky the next day to see the Mortal Instruments movie.
It's totally worth it. It's totally worth it. I was really impressed with what they did with that adaptation.
I cannot wait.
It's so exciting. So totally August 20th, pick up your copy of Dune. And if you're in Cincinnati, stop by Joseph Beth and check out their launch party.
Absolutely. Open to the public. Come help us celebrate. We will have Dunian-themed prizes, 7 p.m.
Excellent, excellent.
Will there be attractive boys in kilts?
I wish. I don't think so.
Because Kyle would fly out just for that.
We have no kilt models and no bagpipes yet. But, you know, we're already planning for, like, BEA next year, ALA. You know, somewhere in the future, I totally see, like, kilts and bagpipes and the whole spectacle.
Awesome.
You gotta have it. Well, thank you guys.
And accents.
Oh, accents are key. Oh, accents. The Scottish accent is lovely, so. Well, again, thank you guys so much for joining us. Dune comes out August 20th. Make sure you pick up a copy. And thank you for listening to this episode of Book Hype. I'm Jen.
I'm Michal. And don't forget to rate and review us on iTunes.
Yes, absolutely. And I'm Kyle.
I'm Carrie.
I'm Lori.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.